It's great to be back here on the microphone. Josh Haston from Jerusalem, Israel, the capital. Israel Uncensored on the landofisrael.com network. That is the new location of the show. Thanks so much for joining us from wherever you are in this wonderful world of ours. It's been like, I don't know, 6-7 months or so since I've taken to the radio. So glad you joined us. So glad to be back. I'm here with my main man, Binyamin Breskey here, who is just an amazing guy. He does so much for the Jewish people, for the state of Israel. And he's been along for the ride on the old station, on the old station. But now we have found a home, thanks to Ari Abramowitz, Jeremy Gimpel, thelandofisrael.com. We will not be silenced. That's what this is all about, okay? One station closes, and they went ahead, and we're opening up a new one. And we're going to bring you the reality of the situation here from Israel. That's why the show is called Israel Uncensored. We're going to talk about the things you are not getting in the mainstream media. We're going to cover all the issues, bring you an insider's perspective as to what's going on here. You can contact me, as always, on Facebook. There is a page for the show on my Facebook page. It's Josh Haston, H-A-S-T-E-N. On Twitter, my handle is Jew of Zion, or you can email me, jhaston374@gmail.com. And I hope you will tune in to all the wonderful shows here on thelandofisrael.com. I mean, things have changed tremendously over the last 6-7 months since we've spoken last. The PA, Palestinian Authority, incitement war. That's what I call it. People call it the stabbing intifada, the knife intifada. I don't use that term, intifada. It's a war. We are in a war here in Israel. I mean, it's part of the worldwide war against terrorism, against jihadism, really, which is taking place on many fronts. This one, maybe it's not being orchestrated by the Palestinian Authority. Maybe they're not giving the orders. Then again, maybe they are. The incitement is coming from top down within the Palestinian Authority. That's why I'm calling it the PA incitement war. Other names, perhaps the social media war, the knife war, if you will. I don't use the intifada. I mean, they are using these tools that we have here today, Facebook and Twitter, and all these things which can be used for good, and I've seen them used for good, and they're using them for evil, our enemies in the Palestinian Authority. We have to say it loudly and clearly. These are not our peace partners. These are our enemies. That has to be clear, okay? And we've been living this reality now for the last 7 months, and I have here the latest stats here as of, I believe, the second week of March here, 2016. 34 people murdered by Arabs, by jihadists, according to the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. 394 people injured. Again, 34 murdered, killed, 394 injured. 203 stabbings and attempted stabbings, 82 shootings, 41 vehicle rammings. Again, since, you know, last week when I printed out these numbers, they've already gone up a little bit. So, but these are the most accurate for the second week of March. According to the IDF, in addition, 800-plus stone-throwing incidents, 337 firebomb throwing attacks. So that's what's been going on since we've last spoken. A lot, to put it mildly. You know, I remember the beginning of this all around Rosh Hashanah 2015, just around 6-7 months ago. Initially, you know, you had these knife attacks, and walking down the streets here in Jerusalem, you had to look over your shoulder and make sure no one was coming after you with a knife. And that might still be the reality today. Or you had to be careful standing, waiting for a bus. My personal story, October the 7th, 2015, and you can check out the video clip, which I shot immediately after the incident. I was nearly lynched, if you haven't seen, by a mob of jihadists who were rushing my car just north of Tekoa, driving on the road from Gush Etzion to Jerusalem, and surrounded by 30, 40 Arabs who had already tried to murder a woman several minutes before me. And thank God I got out of that incident in one piece. You can go check out that video and hear all about it. But that was my personal experience with this PA incitement war directed against me. They were coming after me with blocks, cinder blocks, and they were going to murder me. Okay, and that is, you know, I'm very fortunate. Sadly, many others were not as fortunate. Again, 34 killed. And what bothers me now, reflecting 6-7 months later after the attack on myself and all the other attacks which are taking place nearly daily here, if not daily, it's become the norm. It's become normal. I fear people are getting used to this, you know, tuning into the news every hour and hearing about the latest attack. And I know this isn't 2002 when we had suicide bombings regularly. And I know we're not here in 1929. And I know this isn't 1941 in Europe. But even though this is still the greatest time to be alive as a Jew in 2000 plus years, why do we have to accept this? We shouldn't have to accept this. And it's extremely disturbing that this has become the norm. Every time you turn on the news, another stabbing, another attempted stabbing at least. And it should not be normal. This should not be a normal way of life, even with this worldwide jihad going on. We have to deal with this, and we're going to talk about that here on the show. Again, if you're just tuning in, welcome to the program on thelandofisrael.com radio network. My name is Josh Haston. Thanks so much for joining us. So, in my opinion, the current violence here, the wave, if you will, they're calling it, it's never gone away, really, but it's really definitely spiked in terms of the numbers of attacks, etc., over the last half year. I don't think we're doing enough to stop this. And a Ynet news item here, a study was done, and I'm going to give you some of the results here. It says here, a Ynet investigation, this came out here just the other day, has revealed the number of terrorists' homes, which have been demolished, and the number is only around 10 or so. You know, there's supposed to be a policy of deterrence to destroy terrorists' homes after they carry out these attacks. It says here that despite 230 Palestinian terrorists who have attempted to kill Jews in the recent terror wave of the past 6 months, so far only 10 homes have been demolished since October 1st, 2015, when the Henkin family were murdered. Only 10 homes. In the absence of effective intelligence against individual terrorists, one of the main means of defense possessed by security authorities is deterrence. That should be clear. More and more investigations of attacks reveal that the fear of harming one's family or its financial state can prevent terrorists from heading out to perpetrate attacks. However, in practice, almost no deterrent measures are being carried out. And that is, you know, the crux of this study, and we'll get into it a little bit more here in just a minute here. But this deterrence that we're talking about and stopping this wave, if you will, it has to be from the Palestinian leadership all the way down. That's really what this is all about. They are the ones inciting this war, okay? Ultimately, the Palestinian Authority has to go. In the meantime, or as a means to destroying the Palestinian Authority and to save lives in the process, you have to create a deterrence. And the study shows that it's not happening. We are not creating a deterrence. The incitement is continuing on a daily basis. We are playing defense. If you go to the Gush Etzion Junction, where I live in Gush Etzion, you see hundreds of soldiers, dozens if not hundreds, at different times of the day, guarding the Gush Junction where there have been, I don't know, a dozen or more attacks. But the attacks are still happening. It's still taking place because this is a defensive strategy. We need to go on the offensive. We need to shut down the villages. If the policy is to destroy the homes of the terrorists, okay, then let's do it. But the study, again, this Ynet study shows only 10 houses have been destroyed over 6 months. We need to turn off the internet on the other side. They are using this force. In 2014, I saw so many people step up using social media, Facebook, etc., put together campaigns to help our soldiers money for items needed by our soldiers who are fighting in Gaza. That's an example of Facebook and social media used for good. They are doing the opposite. They are using the Facebook, they are using the Twitter for evil, and we're letting them get away with it. I know that the intelligence here in Israel, the intelligence service, they're monitoring what's going on Facebook, trying to prevent attacks, etc., but that's not enough. The fact that there still is internet, turn off that internet. Turn off the electricity. Don't give them the means. Don't give them the means to carry out the incitement. And unfortunately, we're just not there yet right now. We are not taking care of that business. And just going back to the study here from Wynette here about the policy of destroying homes, and it's not happening. Another issue examined here is potentially to deport terrorists, jihadists who carry out attacks, their families, etc., to Gaza. That's been suggested. However, the Supreme Court here in Israel is getting in the way of that policy, which could be a major deterrent. According to the report here, another proposed deterrent, which has been delayed by the Ministry of Justice, even though it has been approved. Again, it's been approved by the cabinet, the Israeli cabinet. Another example here of the legislature getting involved here in a Knesset or a cabinet decision is the expulsion of terrorists' families abroad or to Gaza. According to the report, a legislative amendment was presented to the Knesset last week by Minister Katz, Israel Katz, but it's not happening now because of scrutiny by our Israeli High Court, our Supreme Court, and these measures of deterrence are not being carried out. Okay. Again, the report says they are focusing on social media efforts, as I mentioned before, to clamp down on those who are stating that individual terrorists who say, I'm going to go out and carry out an attack, etc. But we are not stopping the official incitement coming out of the Palestinian Authority. And I quote here, there is no intention to arrest Fatah officials who continue to publicly support terrorists, etc. None of that. They're not shutting down the Palestinian Authority. These guys have to go. Ultimately, they have to go. It's been 20 plus years that we've called them our partners for peace, relying on the Palestinian Authority to clamp down, I say it laughingly because it's a complete joke, on attacks originating from their areas. They're not doing it. They don't want to do it. They support it. They encourage it. It is the children who are being brainwashed on a daily basis to carry out these attacks. Started. Why does a 12-year-old boy carry out an attack? Why? Because he's been brainwashed since he was 2 years old, since he was able to walk and talk. That is why this is happening, and we are letting it go. We are letting it slide. That is a major, major problem. Until we take serious measures, unfortunately, at this juncture, I think that these attacks are going to continue. I don't see it ceasing. I don't see it stopping. Not while the official Palestinian Authority, of course Hamas for sure, but the Palestinian Authority, they continue to incite towards violence. Any Jew is a target. They've actually killed some Arabs too by mistake in this in the last 6 months. But any Jew here in Israel is a target. So creating a deterrence, shutting down the Palestinian Authority, the incitement which is coming out of there. But from a military perspective, and this is also something extremely disturbing, what I mentioned before in terms of the defense we're playing, again, the 100 soldiers at the Gush Junction, plus, I don't have an exact number, the soldiers in Jerusalem and the border police and the police and everyone trying to thwart the next attack, a lot of police presence here outside the old city, not too far away from where I'm sitting right now. But this is extremely upsetting here. Headline from this past week, the IDF is in talks, according to the Jerusalem Post, to give the Palestinian Authority more responsibility for security in Area A. Again, those are the areas that are under complete Palestinian Authority control. According to IDF Chief of Staff Eisenkot, he told the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee last week. He said these talks, again with the Palestinian Authority, are meant to increase the defensive effectiveness in the area while examining the possibility of decreasing an IDF soldier's presence in Area A. In other words, while they're attacking us, for some reason, the Chief of Staff thinks it would be a better idea to count on the PA to clamp down on the terrorists. The same Palestinian Authority that's supporting the terrorists and encouraging this stuff, and that's naming town squares after attackers, why would we count on them? If you remember, in 2002, Israel launched Operation Defensive Shield after we had horrible, horrible attacks, suicide bombings, dozens and dozens of Israelis were murdered. I mean, it was 1,000 Israelis murdered over the course of several years there in the early 2000s. And what changed there? After the Park Hotel massacre in 2002, Israel launched a military operation. And since 2002, the IDF has had free rein to go into Area A anytime that they saw fit. So the question I have is, why would we want to go back to the situation, as bad as it is now, why would we want to go back to 2001? Why would we want to go back to a situation where we're counting on the PA to thwart the attacks, where the IDF has less of a hand as to what goes on inside the Area A within the Palestinian Authority? What sense does that make? Have we not learned our lesson? Why should we go back to 2001? Why should history repeat itself? Do we want to undo everything that was accomplished in 2002? I mean, if the IDF didn't have free rein until now, I have no doubt that these suicide attacks would be here now. It wouldn't be these knife attacks. The fact, I mean, it's bad. Again, it's a horrible thing, these knife attacks and the rammings and everything going on. But it would be much, much worse if the IDF did not have 100% a free hand to go into Area A when needed. This is mind-boggling to me. I don't understand why, once again, we would go back to the situation then and count on the PA, those carrying out the incitement, count on them for our security. Doesn't make any sense to me. Again, this is Josh Hasten. You're listening to Israel Uncensored on the landofisrael.com network, media network. Get in touch with me on Facebook. There's a page for the show, Israel Uncensored, on my Facebook page, Josh Hasten, Hasden. Follow me on Twitter, Jew at Jew of Zion, or email me, jhasten374@gmail.com. I'm here in Jerusalem in the studio with my main man, Ben Bereski, radio personality, radio extraordinaire. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Monday is my day, from what I understand. I'm going to be on every Monday with new audio, giving you the latest news and views and public diplomacy issues here from the Jewish realm. Reunification. Reunification, we're talking about the those who live under the Palestinian Authority who are being given access to, let's say, marry an Israeli heir and then move into pre-1967 Israel. So what possibly could go wrong there? Well, we're seeing that here in this current wave of terror. We're seeing the results of that policy, that lenient policy, this Family Reunification Act policy, which many on the so-called right have been critical of, myself included, and I think it's justified. Again, you're talking about giving residency to non-citizens, to those who live under the Palestinian Authority, who marry, let's say, Israeli Arabs with citizenship, letting them travel into Israel. Again, people were saying this was dangerous, but the left, so-called, if you will, and I'm not crazy about these terms, left, right, etc., they said this was racist. If you would not allow them to marry who they wanted and to give them citizenship here in Israel, the left said this is racist. Okay, but listen, this is what we're seeing here. This is according to Israel National News. Three terrorists responsible for two attacks in Jerusalem just a week or so ago, entered Israel legally. How did they get to carry out their attacks? How were they able to walk around Jerusalem freely and try to murder Jews? Under the guise of this family reunification program, the Shin Bet, Israel Security Service, reported just last week. The three attackers were involved in shootings in the capital that left two Israeli border police officers seriously wounded. And again, this is all from this permission that they were given to reside in Israel as part of this reunification policy. So this is something that we need to explore. People always ask, well, how do these people get in? You know, back in 2002, as I mentioned, when this deterrence was created, when the IDF was given free rein in Area A, the ability to go in and thwart attacks before they took place, they built this fence or wall or what have you here, which I'm actually not crazy about. Okay, so how are they still getting in? Well, here's one way. Let's do it legally. Let's come in from the villages. We'll marry Israelis, Arabs with Israeli citizenship, and we'll use that to our advantage and carry out attacks. Another policy which needs to be examined and scrutinized. Why are we allowing this to happen? And when it's coming back to bite us, big time in the form of these attacks. It's not the first time, and unfortunately, I don't think it'll be the last time. But now, at least it's being stated for the record here by the security services that this is something that we need to look at. It's very important that this gets taken care of. And people need to stop crying racism, because it's not about race or ethnicity or nationality, etc. It's about thwarting these attacks. It's not persecuting any individual people. But if you're given these freedoms and you turn it into a fifth column, you turn against the Jews here in Israel, then the policy needs to be reexamined. That's something that we need to pay attention to. Turning now, again, public diplomacy, some people call it hasbara. I'm not crazy about the term. I've never been crazy about the term hasbara. Maybe since a show I used to have was once called Israel Hasbara Hour, but I've stopped using that pretty much. We'll call it public diplomacy here in Israel. All is important. There's this two wars going on simultaneously, as you know, on the battlefield, the battle to thwart the terror, etc. The battle for our existence, which is still since 1948, still to this day being, you know, taking place on a daily basis here, trying to survive here in Israel. Thanks to our brave men and women of the IDF, we're able to live freely and broadcast to you live, well, pretty much live from Jerusalem. But public diplomacy, a very disturbing statistic came out the other day, reported by the Times of Israel. Only about 8%, get this, 8% of Israel's foreign ministry's annual budget is being used for diplomatic activity. The rest is being spent on manpower, security, and other logistical and administrative needs. According to this report, in 2015, $33 million, 132 million shekel of the ministry's total budget of 423 million, or 1.65 billion shekel, was spent on what officials called diplomatic activities, development aid, conferences, and public diplomacy. Okay, that is a fraction of the foreign, you know, the foreign ministry is supposed to be, completely reversed. It should be 92% is being spent on public diplomacy, and the other 8% on all the other stuff. But it's exactly the opposite, according to this study. Figures revealed during a Knesset subcommittee on foreign affairs and public diplomacy headed by M.K. Michael Oren from the Kulanu Party. He said only 8% of the foreign ministry's budget goes for actual diplomacy or public diplomatic activity. That is somewhere in the vicinity of what we spend on a platoon of Merkava 4 tanks. One platoon. That, to me, defies logic, Oren told the Times of Israel. In other words, the bottom line with this story is that we are not dedicating the needed resources towards getting the truth about what's going on here in Israel out. And some people may say, well, you know what? The world's going to hate us anyway. And I understand that. And I accept that, etc. But at the end of the day, again, the pen is still mightier than the sword. We are dealing with a war on two fronts. And when you condone, for example, Hamas firing rockets from within their own population centers at Israel's population, and I'm talking about the media, I'm talking about the countries around the world who condone this stuff and accept it as a reality, then the terrorists, the jihadists, they accept it as a reality. They are given the green light by the media to continue this behavior, and then it turns into Israeli casualties, unfortunately, because they are able to do it freely, they're able to get away with it, and nobody does it or says a thing in the international arena. When terror is accepted, when it's justified, when it's condoned in the press, they keep going. The jihadists are motivated to keep going. And that is why this tiny, tiny fraction of a budget for public diplomacy out of the foreign ministry is so disappointing. There are plenty of organizations who are doing amazing work in the sector here, getting Israel's message out. You could probably list a dozen, if not more. Maybe there are 30 or 40. Who knows how many? But these are private initiatives. I mean, this is something that the government should be setting the example with, not the other way around. The government shouldn't have to count on the private initiatives. It should be the private initiatives who are following the lead of the government, and not with a tiny budget being allocated towards public diplomacy. How can anybody, you know, people complain all the time, Israel is terrible, Hasbara, Israel, etc. Well, if the government isn't going to spend or put and invest any money into this, it's not surprising. Why is anyone surprised? It should be a proof is in the pudding. If you're not going to put money in the right places, dedicate and devote yourself towards this stuff, then it's not going to happen. And the proof is in the pudding here. Let's see what else is going on here as we're almost out of time here. Lone wolf, that's a term that's been thrown around over the last 6 months. You know, these attacks are being carried out by lone wolf attackers. You have these kids, teenagers, and adults, of course, waking up in the morning and deciding they're going to go out and stab a Jew. They're going to try to run over a Jew. And that may be the case. But as time goes on, we are seeing that more and more of these attacks. Of course, there's the Palestinian Authority incitement, which we talked about before. So I don't believe in this whole lone wolf, in the theory of a lone wolf, because it all comes from somewhere. The incitement, it's all being supported, and no one is really truly acting alone. But I'm talking about, again, over the past half year, people referring to it as lone wolf attacks. And now we're seeing that more is actually officially being organized. These attacks are being organized by Hamas, by Palestinian Authority or Palestinian Authority policemen, etc. We've seen attacks carried out by those who are supposed to be thwarting the terrorists in the PA. And, of course, complete disaster, relying on the Palestinian Authority. And Hamas came out with a statement last week, said that one of its Hamas members was involved in a car ramming attack on Israeli soldiers near Hebron, or former member, if you will, who was involved back in 2002 in several attacks in which Israelis were killed. The bottom line is that what I'm trying to say is that more and more as time goes on, we are seeing that whether it's Hamas or whether it's the Palestinian Authority, they are taking part. In other words, more and more as time goes on, the theory of lone wolf goes down the drain, because these are organized, affiliated jihadists who are with these terror organizations, and they're the ones who are behind the attacks more and more. We're still having the teens go out and stab, etc. But we are seeing more and more that the IDF, those who say we don't have a target, that's why it's so difficult, we don't have a target, who are we going to attack? What are we going to do? Who are we going to pin the violence on in addition to the incitement? But as time goes on, the address is becoming more and more clear, whether it's Hamas in this case or the PA carrying out these attacks. Eventually, I believe, and hopefully it doesn't get to this, because hopefully we'll deal with it based on the things I said before in terms of shutting down what's happening. But the further we go, I think more we're going to have a bullseye in terms of who we need to direct. I'm talking about from the military perspective, who we need to direct IDF operations against, namely the Hamas, Palestinian Authority, and the rest of them who are carrying out not only the incitement, but who are actually behind these different attacks. I want to finish on some good news here, okay? We've been talking about the last 6 months and the violence, etc. Let's talk about some good things. I mean, because this is still the place to be, folks. I mean, there's no place I'd rather be in the world other than here in Israel, in Jerusalem, broadcasting to you. Number one, Brian in Australia. I've already gotten fan mail, Ben. It's unbelievable. We haven't even gone on the air. A fan mail from Brian in Australia. And it says, greetings, Josh. Good to hear you. You're starting up with Jeremy and Ari under the banner Israel Uncensored. What a better way to start, he says, than to put out the case for the sovereign state of Israel. And he sends me here an attachment, which he says has been censored for close to 100 years. I want to thank Brian in Australia, who sent me a document here talking about how this area, this entire area, including Judea, Samaria, and all the areas here, were designated to be the future home of the Jewish people. Again, this is 100 years ago, the League of Nations mandate, San Remo Conference in 1920, League of Nations. I can't read the whole document here. I don't have time to do that, but I just want to thank Brian for sending this. Maybe people get in touch with you, Brian. Send me your contact details, and people need to see this document here, the sovereign state of Israel. That's what this is all about, the entire country, Judea, Samaria included. A poll, more good news. Despite all this, despite everything going on, 86% of Israelis are happy with their lives. 86%. The overwhelming majority, this according to Yisrael Hayom, overwhelming of Israelis are happy with their lives, and Israelis are more worried about housing prices and their children's education then about personal safety, crime, etc., according to the Quality of Life report published last week by the Central Bureau of Statistics. Despite everything I've said now for the past 30 minutes or so, vast, vast majority, 86% of Israelis are happy with their lives here in the Jewish state of Israel. That's extremely positive. Israel, by the way, seventh in the world for life expectancy. I mean, things are up and up, even with the madness, even with everything crazy going on here. It's great to know. And one last piece of information here. Reuters reports that Israel is actually the 11th happiest country, 11th happiest country in the world. The annual World Happiness Report has ranked Israel. This published in the Jerusalem Post, a Reuters story. This is a third year in a row. The report prepared by the Sustainable Development Solutions Network and the Earth Institute at Columbia University released last week in advance of UN World Happiness Day, which I think already took place just this past week, World Happiness Day. Nevertheless, Israel happier than, according to the study, the United States, the people there, the UK, France, Italy, Israel happier than all these other places. With the madness, with the craziness, with everything else that goes on, we are still a happy people. We are still alive and growing and thriving here in the Jewish state of Israel. And that is a great thing. Always good to end on some positive news. So this was my maiden show. I hope you liked it. I'd love your feedback. Again, on Facebook, it's Josh Hasted. You can go to the show page here, Israel Uncensored at thelandofisrael.com, on my Facebook page, on Twitter, at Jew of Zion. Send me an email, jhaston374@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. We are going to have guests, top-level officials on all realms and all areas here of everything going on in the Jewish state of Israel. But this is just, I just had to open the show without guests and just talk to you, dear listeners, because it's been such a long time, but it's great to be back here on the air. Big shout out to Ben Bresky, radio personality and engineer extraordinaire. Big thank you to all the other hosts here on landofisrael.com network, to Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel. I thank you for the platform. Thank you for putting the mic back in my hands. I am grateful for that. Everybody be safe, and I will talk to you again, please God, next Monday. Shalom from Jerusalem.